They call themselves the Bad Batch. Hunter, Wrecker, Tech, Echo, Crosshair, and Omega. This is the Bad Batch Talk.
Hello there, and welcome back to another episode of the Bad Batch Talk. Hi, I'm William, and wouldn't you know, I'm joined again by Brenton. Hey, buddy.
Yeah, we're back. We're back for... We've been gone, but now we're back.
Yeah, yeah, we had a break for about a week or two.
We skipped a week, so we're probably going to look at doing doubles. But two episodes per go, and we're almost finished, so we'll get it over in no time.
You know what? I don't mind doing the doubles. It kind of, you get through it a little bit quicker, but also it's kind of fun.
I was going to say, it gives us more time to, like, plan, but we didn't plan fucking anything.
No, it's been a busy 2 weeks. It's been a busy 2 weeks in our personal lives, so, you know, it's just one of those things. But you know what? It was actually nice to actually sit down tonight, have a dinner with my good old brother from another mother, and rewatch these two episodes.
We went and got some food.
So we can be nice and fresh.
Yes, and then we sat and rewatched episodes, whatever they are, 11 and 12.
Yes.
That means only 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. So there's only another 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
And then it's all over.
Yeah.
We'll find out maybe what they might be getting at. Who knows? Let's find out while we watch them.
Righto, so where we last left off, the Marauder is taken by a young thief, a boy named Benny Barrow. His owner, Mocko, who prepares to strip the ship for past the cell. Omega devises a way to track down the Marauder. The Bad Batch infiltrate Mocko's mining base and coerce Benny into guiding them. Benny, hoping to gain Mocko's favor, betrays the Bad Batch's presence, but just before being captured, Omega discovers Mocko has been exploiting his workers for his own profit. With the revelation, Benny turns his comrades against Mocko, who falls to his death. The Bad Batch restore their ship, and they leave the planet.
They do. I didn't mind that episode.
I mean, it wasn't a 10 out of 10 episode, but you know what? No. It was still interesting. It was still pretty cool. I mean, it probably was a little bit of a, I don't know, curveball to what we thought was a second part to the last episode where we've seen them, you know, stuck in the caves, the mining caves and all that. And now we're kind of like chasing down the ship, and it turns out it's just another Lord of the Flies kind of type thing.
I think what was interesting, I was excited because it was a two-parter, but then it turned out to be not that important of a two-parter.
No.
And it also gave... I thought it would have given them the opportunity to really hammer home Sid's betrayal. But they did, but not as much as they could have.
It was more laziness than betrayal.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you guys are on the other side of the galaxy. I just couldn't be arsed. Yeah, like, you'll be right.
Yeah, like, whatever.
Yeah. They could have pushed Sid's betrayal a little bit more, but I think there's going to be a funny little mix of that coming down the track. Maybe. I mean, hopefully not.
We've only got a couple episodes left, so...
Yeah, we do.
I think it'll just be like, they'll go back there, they'll be like, Sid, you're a fuckwit, and then she'll be like, get out of here, you lot, and that's the end.
Like, yeah. They famously walk through the door at Sid's bar, and Sid's like, oh yeah, just come into this room, and we'll sit down and we'll have dinner. Opens the door, and Darth Vader's just standing there. Hunter pulls his blaster, shoots him. Darth Vader takes the blaster. I'd be honored if you would join us.
Yep.
Door goes, shoo, and just closes.
I can see that happening because they've got no creativity sometimes in this shit. What I would think was funny is, like, they're leaving the cantina, and they're like, all right, we're out of here. And Ketch and Bolo are like, who are those guys?
Oh, yeah. Or it's like Dry July, and Ketch and Bolo walk in just drinking water. And like, they're like, oh, my God. And they speak, like,
way quite... more sophisticated.
Yeah, they speak more, so much more intelligent. That'd be hilarious. Good old Ketch and Bolo. They need a spin-off series on that.
I want Ketch and Bolo figures.
I do, too.
I'm going to hit up Adrian. I'm going to hit up the Syndicate.
If you do, please let me know, customs. Because I'll like to join onto that,
too. I'll see what he's got.
I mean, even if they made, like, a Star Wars Ketch and Bolo fight night UFC style, it's like the old-school punch-em boxing game that you could buy. And it's just catching Bolo, just punching on, making slams and all sorts of stuff.
So, yeah, unfortunately, I think for that last, the only really two-episode arc to a degree, outside of the main plot, it was pretty bland. It was just a sort of a pointless non-adventure. But
yep.
They seem to be really having these bland, fillerish adventure of the day sort of episodes. But then they get into these episodes again. And the whole narrative changes, and we go from kiddie TV show to very hard drama.
Yeah.
Like, the shit that goes on in these episodes is so chalk and cheese from these previous ones. And this is what I love about the storytelling of what Dave Filoni can do.
Yep.
As opposed to this other kiddie stuff. But I guess they've got it. I think we've talked about it before. They're trying to appease to... These birds, go away, birds. They're trying to appease to children because they want children to watch the show. They want to have a gateway drug of Star Wars. But then they're also like, we want to also have the fans that really want the meat of the story.
Yeah, we want the deep story arcs. We want the guts of it.
Yep.
Mind you, when they do throw out a humdinger, it is absolutely amazing. They knock it out of the park. Like,
and just like this episode.
Yes.
Not this episode, episode 12, more so. This one's a little bit more of a, not a filler, but it's good because it does relate back to the past more so than any of the other episodes.
Oh, very much.
Right? Yeah. So we're getting back to the core narrative as well of the whole show, because it does point back to what's going on with old Palpy.
And his plans for the future.
Old creamy sheave.
old nutsack head.
Yeah. So, this episode is called Metamorphosis.
Just a couple of S's?
Yes, and this is episode 11. This episode opens up with a derelict ship floating through space. It appears to be abandoned at first, but the notion is quickly obliterated by screams of agony and fear. A lone surviving clone commando. Cause you can't call them Republic commandos anymore.
No.
Because the Republic's gone.
Mind you, the ship is not the Sulaco.
It's not, but they want it to be. Oh. The surviving clone commando is eventually taken and eaten by an unseen creature. Would have loved to see the little commando man put up a bit of a fight before he's consumed by the creature.
I mean, do some more commando stuff instead of just running through the hallway scared as shit.
He was a bit chicken.
He does the cliche trip over and looks around and then, oh my God, the creature's above me. And then next you know, the creature's eating a nice crunchy clone. Mind you, if anyone wants a free commando clone costume, just stand behind this beast and wait for it to shit it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if like costuming is a part of the world where people dress up and pretend. In Star Wars.
Cosplay in a Star Wars universe. That's interesting.
Yes. All right. Meanwhile, a group of shuttles arrives on a planet called Wayland, which is right.
Just missing the Yutani.
Yeah. And that, of course, that is a planet that was created by Timothy Zahn from the novel Heir to the Empire, which, of course, is where Mount Tantus exists.
Yes.
So this is what I particularly love, that they're taking EU stuff and reinserting it back into the lore. We've seen Tantus a number of times. And, of course, in the book, Tantus was where Palpatine had his Sparty clone cylinders.
That is correct, yes.
And a lot of his antiques and equities. He collected a lot of things and they lived on Mount Tantus. And Mount Tantus was also protected by Jorah Sabath.
Yes.
Which... Fuck, I would think I'd do a backflip if he gets inserted into the canon somehow. And it could happen too. It could be an Ahsoka. Like, you know, well, I think it'd be fantastic if they did. Mm. I think they're stupid not to. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you insert all this really cool stuff that people love instead of try and make up your own shit? Now, I'm not saying don't make up your own shit. Do, please make up your own shit. But also use some of the stuff that pre-exists. Why not?
Yeah, definitely. I mean...
Give us both.
Ahsoka's going to be awesome if they do add some form of EU into it. That'd be amazing.
So, Tantus, of course, at the moment is a covert cloning facility. We saw that teased at the end of the last season. A man named Dr. Ryan Hemlock. Ryan's an odd name, I feel, for Star Wars. I don't know why. There's Luke. Luke's a name in Star Wars, but...
Han?
That's not a real name, though. No.
Leia.
He's called Han. Leia definitely is. But Ryan Hemlock feels like a real daytime drama, you know, like midday sort of name. That's
We know that. We know that fella that lives down the road from you, Lando. You know,
old Lando.
Yeah.
So Ryan Hemlock's voiced by Jimmy. Oh, now I've forgotten his name. Jimmy Simpson.
Jimmy Simpson.
Yeah. He is an actor, obviously. You might know him from, if you watched Westworld. Willie hasn't watched Westworld.
No, we had this conversation earlier.
He's a naughty boy. Jimmy's a great actor. Love him. So Mr. Ryan Hemlock exits one of the ships and goes to the cell where former Kaminoan chief scientist Nala Say is being held. She refuses to work for this fella because, and their higher purpose for the Empire, which has got something to do with old Palpy. Hemlock threatens to make her comply via more forceful methods. What a nasty little man.
Yeah. I like that he talks to her and calls her mistress. Nah, Mistress Say.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's a bit creepy. So, he's about to leave, but another Tantus staff member informs him that they've lost contact with one of their transports. That's the one with the bowl haircut.
Yeah.
The lady. Hemlock responds that they need to prioritize finding the ship and containing the specimen that was held inside. Now, I've got a feeling this is the ship that we've seen earlier. When they ask if any other Kamoans are alive, who he might be able to interrogate, Skulder replies that Lama Su is available. Now, Lama Su was the Prime Minister
of Kamino.
Yes. He requests that the former Prime Minister is brought to the facility. Now, was Lama Su executed?
No. No, he was imprisoned and taken back to Coruscant.
Okay.
To where? Coruscant.
I wasn't sure if that was a breaking canon. All right, so elsewhere, the Bad Batch are giving Sid a piece of their mind while flying back home on the Marauder. She tries to shrug it off. Her lack of action when they were stranded was no big deal. But the team isn't buying it. She then attempts to make things right by offering them a seamlessly easy, lucrative salvage job she just heard about. When she sees how pissed off they are, the Bad Batch, that is, she offers them half of whatever they find after a little bit of negotiation. Love that little scene.
Yep.
Because, like, she's throwing, like, 30%, and Hunter's like, nah. And then he's like, 35, and Wrecker's like, yeah, that sounds all right. We'll go with that. And Hunter's like, nah.
But even though, it's not just Hunter. It's the whole crew Wrecker. It's just literally just standing there, Wrecker's arms like, folded, and just glares. And she's like, and then Wrecker's like, yeah, 35. Oh, yeah, come on, let's do it.
So after Sid signs off, Tech points out that cutting ties with her could be a problem since she knows so much about them. They could disappear. What does she really know? She goes, oh, they exist.
Oh, they're a bunch of clones?
Yeah, they're gone now.
They have a female clone?
Yeah. He then suggests that they do this one last mission before diplomatically breaking things off. Hunter isn't thrilled with the idea, but still agrees to do it. So, back to the Nostromo. We find the ship crashed on an unidentified planet. The team noticed that something that definitely wasn't human or humanoid caused a massive amount of damage. There's also no sign of the crew, leaving them to believe they've all perished. Tech decides that this is the perfect time to prove he's never watched a horror movie before and goes off on his own. He can reconnect the ship's power while he's at it. While he's doing that, a droid pops out of the wall and warns him from imminent danger before running out of power.
Oh, look at that. A malfunctioning droid.
Yes. Predictably, this does nothing to stop Tech from journeying further into the ship. Meanwhile, Hunter, Wrecker, and Omega search the ship and eventually find a lab. Omega recognizes the equipment as Kaminoan technology, although it's configured in a way she's not familiar with from previous adventures through the Topoka City.
It's changed from human setting to animal setting.
Yes. Funny little beast setting. Now, Wrecker then noticed some slime on a reinforced wall. I wouldn't say it was slime. It does look like slime, but it's more like goober.
Bit of spunk.
Yeah. Sure enough, a monster slithers down from the ceiling and attacks. It looks like a giant... I don't know what you'd call it. Looks like something from Mario. What's their name? It's a little... I'm talking crap. Wrecker attempts to hit the beast with electro staff he found, which was one of the commando was holding from the opening of the episode, while the creature easily devours anything around it. They eventually manage to drive it off with their blasters, just as Tech gets the ship's power restored. Tech calls in to say that he thinks the ship was a research vessel. Hunter responds that whatever its crew was researching has escaped and it's heading his way. The other three chase the monster, which they find feeding off the ship's power supply. It also looks significantly different and larger than in moments before. Before the creature can attack them, Tech flanks the beast and fires at the ship's generators, causing a massive explosion that blows a hole through the hull. Whoopsie doodle. The creature immediately takes off to the forest, moving at a furious pace towards a nearby village. Hunter and Wrecker decide to go after it, while Tech and Omega stay behind to access the ship's files on the creature. Maybe figure out why their blasters only seem to piss it off without actually causing any damage. Hunter and Wrecker attempt to track and shoot the creature in the Marauder, but it easily evades their cannon fire. Just to rub salt in the wound, the monster totally pulls off a cloverfield and jumps into the ship's canopy and roars at Wrecker before leaping down and continuing towards the village. You ever watched Cloverfield?
I have.
It's not a bad movie.
It's interesting.
Meanwhile, Tech and Omega discover that the ship's lab was being used to extract genetic data from a host. She heard about the Kaminoans doing off-world experiments like this, but had never been allowed to learn anything about it. After decrypting the files, they discover that creature was being used to develop armor plating due to its nearly indestructible scales. It also feeds on energy, which is what caused its rapid growth. Loves a bit of zip-zap. After reading a bit further, Tech radios to tell Hunter and Wrecker that this is the same type of creature that attacked Coruscant during the Clone Wars. He also warns them not to let it get near the village's grid power. Power grid.
The old Zillow Beast, eh?
Yes, it is the Zillow Beast returning from the Clone Wars.
Yeah, the one creature that actually struck fear into even Darth Sidious's heart.
Yes. And yeah, it's awesome to have a follow-up to one of the best arcs in the Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah. We still haven't seen this bulletproof armor.
No. And I wonder where that's going to pop up again. Because, no, I'm thinking of Mandalorian. Apparently there's going to be like the red silly guards in Mandalorian, but this is way before that anyway. But that was 13 years ago, by the way, the Clone Wars episodes with that arc in it.
It was, yes.
Mm. And apparently Zillow Beast popped up in a comic books as well since. But seeing it back on the screen is really cool. As if things weren't bad enough, Hemlock's forces manage to track the ship and the creature as well. Despite having a mission to detain the Zillow Beast, the Imperial forces have no problem going off script and firing at the Marauder. At least some of the Imperial fleet remains on mission and heads off to destroy the downed ship. Tech wants to stay and download the rest of its data, but Omega convinces him to leave. Her instincts turn out to be pretty solid when they barely manage to escape before the ship gets obliterated. I think it's here where there's a scene where they're running away from the ship and Tech grabs her and like spins her around him and like throws her behind a crate or something.
He grabs a hold of her. He kind of cradles her around, spins around, and then he kind of puts his arms around her and they hide behind a corner.
Yeah. So that, I'm pretty sure that's the scene I'm thinking of. I thought it's really cool to see them give a shit about Omega. Obviously they do, but like, I don't know. It's just cool to see them save her.
Well, it's just that it's just reaffirming the bond and connection the last time we seen them.
Yep. So meanwhile, a squad of gunships, which I'm pretty sure are the LATs, take out the power generators before a specialized transport ship uses a sonic weapon to bring down the Zillow Beast. Looks like little Death Star cannons, but blue.
It just looks like your average beam weapon. Like we did see this fat cannon used on Anakin's flagship in the Battle of Coruscant.
Yeah, okay.
In Revenge of the Sith.
I wonder if it's like an energy zapping ship, like an ion cannon, where ion cannons neutralize energy. I guess
yes.
Probably. You know what? It's probably an ion cannon.
You know what? Yeah, there you go. An ion beam.
Yeah. All right. So it uses a grappling line to snag the creature and pull it up like a big old grabby claw machine.
It looked like a skill tester.
Yep. All this going on, Hunter and Wrecker manage to evade the ships chasing them long enough to extract Omega and Tech and break the atmosphere and escape into hyperspace.
Whoop-a-cha.
After the Imperial transport lands, a squad of clone commandos, led by a Scorch of Delta Squad fame, rounds up the villagers and forces them onto a ship. Meanwhile...
He's missing his backpack.
He's missing the attachments on his backpack. Come on, mate. They need to put this shit into the show.
Game and greats ate a dick.
Yep. Meanwhile, another group of commandos pull the Zillo Beast into a tank filled with a substance and causes it to go sleepy sleep. Scorch is, or maybe was, a member of Delta Squad, who were the main character of the video game Republic Commando. Now, there's a lot of Legends books with him containing in it. Last door we saw Scorch, he was training stormtroopers for the Empire. I remember when we first seen him in the other episodes, or was it season one?
Yep.
They actually made a point of saying that's not Scorch, it's just somebody who has a very particular set of armor. Supposedly now they're coming out and saying that it is Scorch.
Yeah, but then it kind of defeats all purpose of saying it's not Scorch, but yeah, it is Scorch. But what about in Clone Wars when we've seen Savage Opress first come onto the scene when he attacked that Jedi Temple, Delta Force went over there to investigate and they come back. We've seen Scorch as well.
But for some reason they were saying in Bad Batch though that it wasn't Scorch. He just happened to have the armor. So
yeah. I don't
know. It's all very silly.
I mean, clones don't like other clones betraying their armor.
Back aboard the Marauder, Tech reads the data he was able to extract. When he theorizes that the Empire's decision to destroy Kamino wasn't to eliminate cloning, it was to make sure that they were the ones who had total control of it.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yes. Hunter responds to this by telling him to send all the data he has to Rex and Echo and see if they can help. And then we see a little cut to Omega and she's like, ooh, get my boy, Echo.
Yeah, there was that little cheeky little smirk. She's like, yeah. My boys, my man, my man.
Later, Scorch and his team arrive back at Mount Tantus. He confirms to Hemlock that the villagers saw the Zillo Beast and assures him that they'll be dealt with. Now, yeah, they scoop up all these peoples and they just take them somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we know it's not to a crazy watery planet where they're making, you know, unspecified pieces.
Death Star things.
Spoilers without context.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we know there's no aliens in there.
No, that's it. There's no aliens in that prison, so it can't be the prison because there's too many aliens in this show.
No. But this is a heavy time where Palpatine actually persecuted against aliens.
Maybe he killed all the aliens and then sent all the humans to the prison.
Yeah, and then he just sent those aliens to like a food processing plant.
Yep. Soylent Green.
Yep.
He also says that a military aircraft escaped, which Hemlock tells him to track down. He then turns his attention to Lama Su, who has just arrived. After a bit of persuasion, Hemlock is able to convince the former Prime Minister to help him lean on Nala Se to work with the Empire. Lama Su tells him that if he wants to make her do something, the best bet is to find and capture a young female clone. I think he means Omega.
Omega?
Omega. So that's the first episode of these two episodes.
I mean, it's kind of a little bit of a setup, you know?
Yeah, it gives a little bit more information as far as how important Omega might be. But yeah. At the moment, they're only doing it to... See, they kind of don't really realise what they're getting at with Omega. Like, I don't think she's important. They're not saying she's important to whatever cloning process is going on. They're just saying that if you want Nala Se to do anything, you need to have...
You need to use Omega as leverage.
As bait and leverage.
Because Kamino is a quite cold, calculating creatures. You know, void of any form of emotion. But we have seen Nala Se is quite connected to Omega. I think yep. Because Omega's sort of like her little prodigy. You know, she's my favourite. I made a female clone. You 100%. Know, look how clever I am.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And now this episode, it wasn't totally awesome, but it was pretty good to be injected into the series. Like, it's been lagging. I haven't been a huge fan. This is better, though. This is better.
Yep. I mean, it kind of expands a little bit more on what the actual plot is to a greater story, in a sense, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, little hit-and-run missions here and there, fillery sort of episodes. We've, you know, out of world kind of context. Now we're actually getting a little bit more explained here and there, a little bit more added to the plot.
Some weird things is like the Imperials just like fire on the Bad Batch on sight. It's like, why?
For all they know, there could have just been like a ship there, like trying to help.
Yeah, like it's just strange. I know it's just for plot, but they were gonna deal with the witnesses and the civilians.
Yep.
Like, why didn't they just shoot at them? Just take them all out. Like, it's just, it's still like the inconsistencies.
Like forgive them, like the Will Smith 1-2 and just lay them out.
Yeah, it's just, they don't have to. Why are they taking them away? Just shoot them there. If they want them dead, just shoot them there.
You didn't say nothing.
Yeah. Anyways, it's still one of the strongest episodes of the season, which I've really appreciated. It's been good.
Yes.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the large part that the genre that they're paying homage to. Like, it's clearly an alien. To start off being a very alien-esque.
When you're reading it, you're reading it, it started going from Alien to very Aliens 3, the unspoken movie.
No, that's not the unspoken movie.
Oh, no, so that's Alien Resurrection.
The fourth one's the unspoken one.
It's the end of very Aliens 3.
Yeah. Which part of it?
Well, you've got like a, you know, they're running around this place trying to basically kill this alien. And it's like Weyland-Yutani rock up at the end to try and, you know, steal off the alien to try and capture it and retake it back to the, you know, research facility to weaponize.
No, absolutely. And that's like most of the alien thing is always about Weyland coming to try and take the alien.
Yeah.
All right, and hopefully we get a reunion with Rex and Echo coming up soon. That was hinted at, so I'd say one of the upcoming episodes will be about that. You'll get a Rex and Echo.
I wonder if we'll get like to see like an Echo, you know, R&R uniform.
Yeah, out of his armor. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen his out of armor sort of costume like a couple of episodes previous, where they're just chilling the bar, no armor on. It's like they're wearing their modified undersuit for their kit. And that's what they just cruise around in. But it'd be interesting to see if he actually got like a whole new vibe style sort of, you know, get up.
Yeah, a little bit more muted and more Rex-like. Like Rex had the cloak and like they're more covert.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to episode 12, The Outpost.
What an episode.
I like it. This episode shifts focus to another one centered on Crosshair, and it is a bit of a gut punch for me. Crosshair, I never, all of season one, I just didn't give a fuck about Crosshair. I was like, yeah, he's just doing his thing, like, okay, he wants to be part of the Empire, all right, ta-ta. But now that they're funny enough developing him more than the other Bad Batch members,
yeah,
I'm like, I would rather watch more the whole series all about Crosshair dealing with him making the wrong... Is it the wrong... Did he make the wrong decision?
I think it's just a false sense of loyalty.
Yep. So he's now... he has to now come to sense his decision of joining the Empire, but now seeing, like, how they're actually treating the clones, he's like, shitballs.
Oh, well, they have been pulling their heartstrings quite a lot. One minute, you know, where... We're viewing the clones as the enemy. We hate the clones because they committed Order 66. Look what they've done. And yeah, then next minute, we get the episode 2 with Commander Cody and Crosshair. And now we're like, yeah, go the clones. They're battling battling the droids. Yeah, this is awesome. And then every other episode after that, you know, the bloody clones. And now they're starting to pull those strings a little bit tighter. And, you know, we're feeling those feels against the clones of the persecution of a, you know, mistreated toy that's now... apparently obsolete, which we all know is absolute and utter bullshit.
Yep.
Put a clone unit or a clone battalion up against a battalion of stormtroopers, I guarantee you we know who's going to win that firefight.
Episode opens with Crosshair watching as a trio of clone troopers are callously brushed off following their forced retirement from service. He's interrupted when a lieutenant, Mr. Nolan, approaches and admonishes him being out of uniform. The clones that are being told, you're no good. I think it's interesting that the human person that is telling them they're no good is just robotic and not human.
Yeah.
That's, it's just showing that the clones are way more human than what's replacing them by far. After Crosshair puts his helmet on, Nolan explains that he'll be the commanding officer during their mission to an Imperial supply depot on the icy planet Barton 4. Their objective is to guard some valuable cargo from local insurgents until it can be transferred by week's end. Nolan then notices some of the clone troopers on the transport and scoffs at their presence. When Crosshair asks if there's a problem, Nolan responds that he doesn't like used equipment. Ooh.
I love that Crosshair line.
Problem.
Fucking love it.
It is good. So, when they arrive on Barton 4, Nolan gets off to a great start by having a go at one of the clone troopers for running into him after he stops in front of the ramp. He actually slips at the bottom. It's very funny. He then enters the depot, which only has three clones left. Hex, Veach, and their commander,
Mayday.
Mayday mentions that they're long overdue for reinforcement. Nolan chastises him for speaking out of turn. He even goes as far to blame Mayday for the supplies that have been stolen and getting his ridiculously unsupported troops killed by insurgents. The two verbally spar for a bit. Nolan is finally escorted off to see the rest of the base. Once he's gone, Mayday begins talking to Crosshair. The sniper initially tries to shut him out, but relents and continues to communicate with him. Mayday takes Crosshair outside, where he reveals that the depot's sensors are malfunctioning, making it much easier for the raiders to attack without warning. He's requested that they be repaired, but to no avail. Instead, the Empire simply instructs him to protect the crates, the contents which are a complete mystery at all costs. Not really impressive when they do you define it what it is. And when we get there, I'll talk about it.
Very underwhelming.
I'll talk about what it should have been. Mayday also warns Crosshair not to head out alone, lest he becomes food for the circling ice vultures. Despite how vicious the creatures are, Mayday respects them for their ability to survive. I do believe that that's a visual metaphor for Crosshair.
Yes.
Or even the clones in general, to be honest. The pair are interrupted when a call comes over the radio about raiders attacking the depot. Crosshair is able to tag one of them with a non-fatal wound, but before the raiders kill Hex and Veach, they blow up the transport, and he follows the blood trail to a hidden cavern, revealing how the raiders were able to sneak onto the depot so easily, through the caverns. He's then joined by Mayday. The pair head back to the base, where they're chastised by Nolan once again for allowing two crates of cargo to be taken. He then tasks them with recovering it, which Mayday says will require manpower that they don't have due to Hex and Veach being killed in the raid. Didn't get to meet Hex and Veach real much, did we?
No, I didn't even get to even hear a voice. It would have been nice to just hear their own personality.
Especially to recover these two crates. They were killed. Nolan retorts that this isn't the place to determine a mission's value before demanding that he and Crosshair take on the mission themselves. I think Crosshair works really good with these individual episode clones. We've seen it with him and Cody, and now we see it with him and Mayday. On Mayday real quick, I freaking love his design.
Oh, they done well with the modifications to his armor for the planet.
Just the wraps around him, the little sheet around his head. It just makes him so individual, and we've never really seen it before.
No, not to that extent, no. We've seen different colours on clones, but not so much real, armor kit modifications.
And I've got to say, if I was building a clone, a Phase 2, I'd probably do something like this, because we really love having something that's very particularly different.
Oh, definitely.
Although I do have, obviously, Republic Commando armor, but it's not just white. It's painted in a certain way with weathering that makes it look its own.
Yep.
But this is something that I would consider doing to a clone trooper. But you know what? If I was, I don't know where I'd wear it anymore, but if I was still had the Republic Commando up, I'd do it to that. Just do a similar sort of feel to the, you know, the wrap that has got around some of the parts, just to give it that little bit different.
Yeah.
And now, obviously anyone listening to this probably knows about the 501st, but they're very anal about what you can and can't do to your armor. But this would be something that I'd do for myself. But like I said, where I'd wear it, I don't know. It'd just be me walking around in my bedroom being really cool. Okay, so as these pair head back through the hidden cave, they find a dead raider wearing some of the clone trooper's armor. This is obviously previous members of Mayday's crew. Mayday expresses disgust that they would leave one of their own behind. Meeting the raiders left this guy behind to die. Crosshair responds that it's likely a matter of not wanting to carry dead weight. Foreshadowing. Mayday sarcastically retorts by asking to be reminded not to die on Crosshair's watch. Later, Crosshair steps on a pressure mine. I love this scene. When Mayday is able to disarm it with improvised tools and despite his unit's lack of resources. While he's working, the clone commander expresses his uneasiness of how their ranks are being treated by the Empire now the clone wars are over. This is a really cool scene. I really enjoyed seeing him disarm this bomb and then piss off around the corner.
It was very Vietnam War-ish, eh, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And also just the fact that, like, he's like, you know, are you not trusting in your skills? And he's like, it's not that. I'm just not stupid. Okay, Mayday and Crosshair find the Raiders' base and attack. Despite being, quite better fighters, they're eventually overwhelmed by the opposition's numbers. Before the pair can be overrun, Crosshair shoots an unguarded explosive, wiping the rest of their attackers out, while causing a cave-in that seals off the base. After diving out of the way, the pair find the two missing cargo crates, which one of the Raiders tried to escape with. That's a pretty good little scene where Crosshair, I think it's Crosshair, gives him a shot and he just blows up. And the crates, of course, popped open, and it's inside a brand new set of Stormtrooper armor.
But TK armor.
But it is the new TK armor, that's right. And I think this would have been much cooler if it was the
proper Stormtrooper.
OT Stormtrooper armor.
Well, it's all gone through the Senate. You know, and it's been, you know, confirmed, you know, the launch of the Stormtrooper Corps.
Yeah.
So that would have been, makes sense.
That would have been a much better little nod. And we go, oh, it's original TK armor.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's got to come up somewhere. So it's like, what, it sort of makes you go, what's the point of this new armor? Like, it's kind of hard to, it's obviously a big universe, but it's hard to digest when this armor hasn't been seen anywhere in any other property. It's only for this really weird little niche Bad Batch stuff.
Yep.
I don't know. Would have been cool if it was the regular OT armor.
I wonder. The very end of Clone Wars Season 7, when we see the Venator on that planet, how long do you reckon that is after the course of when it crashed? We see the Stormtroopers there and the new Stormtrooper armor.
Was this in
Season 7 of Clone Wars, very end scene.
With Vader.
And
he goes to where Ahsoka was.
Yeah, and all of his boys are wearing actual Stormtrooper armor.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't really know. I couldn't even guess. It's hard to say. All right, so that armor, Mayday mentions that his troopers needed it badly, but forced to sacrifice themselves to protect. So they were protecting armor, which they could have been wearing, which would have saved their lives.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Typical Empire stuff. Upon making this discovery, the commander drops a heavy quote. That quote is, "We're good soldiers. We followed orders. And for what?" Before Crosshair can respond, an avalanche from the previous explosion rumbles down towards them. As they run for their lives, Mayday pushes Crosshair so he won't be trapped behind a rock. Both soldiers end up getting buried, but Crosshair managed to pull himself out. Now, he does lose his helmet, and I think this is a total insinuation that the helmet was related, like he was told he was out of uniform by not wearing it. Now he's taking it off. He's removing himself from the Empire step by step.
Yeah. Yep, definitely.
Okay, so Crosshair makes his way over to where Mayday was submerged under the snow and digs him out. He then tells the commander to get up. He responds by insisting Crosshair go on without him, since he won't make it. Now, hearing this causes something inside Crosshair to break. Instead of leaving the dead weight, as we referred to before, he puts Mayday's helmet back on his head, pulls his arm around him, and he begins to carry him back to the base. This is storytelling. This is giving character development that is missing from all the other characters in this show. Why does Crosshair have the most character development but the least showtime? Now, you could argue that that's good. Why spread it out and water it down? and we just get these chunks and we're like, oh, that's awesome. But then there's all these other episodes where it's like, that's really average.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think having the smaller episodes with just seeing the these character developments by Crosshair, I think that in a way they're thinking, oh, maybe this is going to, you know, personify how big his character changes are by having small and tiny snippets of it, because he is such a soldier. He was very quiet. He's very to himself. He's the loner, and he's 100% the soldier, whereas the other boys had their quirks, their personalities, pretty out there kind of guys. But it was interesting to see the loner come out of his shell and wake up to himself to realize, you know, that false loyalty to the Empire is really just, it's destroyed morally what is, you know, at the core to him, right? Yep. The mistreatment of his all these clones and brothers, you know, they're all soldiers that have fought in a massive war. You know, it's crazy to see this change in Crosshair, but at the same time, it's phenomenal. I absolutely love every single minute of it.
Yep.
Seeing him huddle Mayday in the snow, making sure he's all good, man, that was a fucking powerful scene.
And also tied into that is facial expressions.
Yes,
and
yes.
And when it comes to animation, obviously they don't get the recognition they deserve. And Crosshair's visual emotions during these scenes is, like I was saying at the beginning, a gut punch.
Yeah.
Some of it's really heartbreaking.
Even seeing like the snow that's caught up around the ribs inside of his undersuit and his armor, man, that's phenomenal.
The detail in that is awesome. So after a long and brutal, exhausting journey, Crosshair and Mayday arrive at the base to see it's now filled with transports and stormtroopers. Upon seeing them, Nolan just absolutely berates them.
Couldn't spare any troopers for the mission.
Yep. And the pair have been gone so long, he just goes off. When Crosshair tells him that Mayday needs a medic, Nolan only criticizes him for not returning with the crates. As far as he's concerned, medical care for a dying clone trooper would be a waste of the Empire's resources. Once Mayday passes, Nolan twists the knife further, explaining that Mayday was expendable while promising to make Crosshair meet a similar fate if he continues to be insubordinate. He then goes to order the sharpshooter to get on his feet and get back to work. And we see again the ice vultures circling overhead. Crosshair breaks again. This time, however, he decides to take a life and fatally guns down Nolan. Man, when this bit played out, as I was sitting there watching it, I already knew what was going to happen. I'm just like, kick this motherfucker's ass.
Yeah.
Fucking destroy him. He takes out a gun and he shoots down Nolan. And then he drops to the ground and passes out as stormtroopers surround him. Sometime later, Crosshair awakens in Mount Tantus, the cloning mad scientist facility, and he's injected with a substance by Dr. Skulder, who assures him that he might have a chance at survival if he cooperates. I got a little theory.
The Dark Trooper.
I got two little theories.
The Death Trooper.
I got two little theories. Man, I really believe, I reckon, and it'd be madness, right? Like, they could not link it, because why would they bother? But I reckon Death Troopers. My theory is that Death Troopers are clones of Crosshair.
I mean, you couldn't find a better specimen to do it from.
Yeah, and it's funny though, I did read up on Death Troopers a bit, and according to canon, but canon's pretty loose and fast when Disney's concerned, really. They were actually stormtroopers that were selected to be part of the Death Trooper program. But I reckon if they were cloning and they're fiddling and they take Crosshair, clone him, modify him, augment him, put him into the Death Trooper armor, because his armor is already pretty reminiscent of the Death Trooper armor. The green visor, even the mouthpieces, I think they're green.
Yeah.
The black with the silver belt, it's pretty effing close, man.
Yep.
I would be so pretty happy if they did that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's missing some of the ammo pouches and the pauldrons and all that kind of stuff. But, you know,
that's easily added.
It is, of course.
And Dr. Skelder.
Ah.
This is my second theory, and it's pretty silly. But, man, I'm just getting these, like, Omega vibes off her. Because it is an Australian actress, which I can't think of the name.
It was the voice. The voice done it all. Since you very first mentioned it to me, after hearing her voice, it sounded very, like, an older mannerism from an older version of what we would perceive to be Omega.
Yeah, okay, so it's not Skaldar. They've got this wrong. This in these little notes that I had here. That's not Skaldar at all. It's another character that I don't have the name of right now. But she's an Australian actress. Australian, New Zealand, similar accents. Some of the words she says, very similar. I would find it interesting if she was a clone of the clones. She's a female version of the clones. Similar, maybe she's a generation before Omega. She had the accelerated growth, who knows. Probably not true at all, but I thought it'd be interesting if, like, this... Crosshair makes a comment, "Who are you?" And it's not answered, she just ignores it. So I think it'd be fascinating if she turns out to be some sort of clone.
Like another variant of a Jango Fett clone, but female?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, just definitely. Another one. And it's part of the, you know, Omega program, whatever it was that...
Yeah. It's funny that it's like all clones know a clone when they hear a voice or see a face, even if they don't look much like a clone. They know they're a clone. I think it's the eyes. Tex mentioned this before. It's a characteristic for all clones to have the brown eyes. Hey, hazel eyes.
So, yeah, this episode was fantastic. And with Crosshair and his respect for Mayday, it transformed through the episode into this real genuine bond. He didn't really want to do anything for the reg, they're called, to start off with. But as Crosshair watched Mayday continue to do, like, the impossible, and refusing to take crap from the Imperial bureaucrat, old mate Nolan.
Yep.
Especially when he saved Crosshair's life, we got to see Crosshair evolve.
And yeah. I think also seeing all these Imperial officers use and abuse Crosshair, he knows it. Yep. And I think he's just copped the shit with it. And he's over it, you know, and he's... Even now, I think he knows that he's starting to chastise the authority. Especially, you know, having his bucket off, you know, you're not in, you know, in official uniform, blah, 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 you know.
Yep.
Problem.
And Mayday is joining a growing list of clone troopers who defy Order 66 to a degree.
Yeah.
So we had the mutiny against Pong Krell, which we've talked about before. Captain Hauser, back in the last season.
Yes.
He refused to the Empire's occupation of Ryloth.
Fan favourite, Captain Hauser.
And then also we've seen recently Wilco, who, from the first episode, refusing to falsify a report.
Yeah.
Who Rampart then shot between the eyes.
Isn't it funny, every Imperial officer, authoritarian presence that we've had so far, they've all just been an absolute bunch of scumbag assholes.
Yeah. Yep.
Like... You instantly hate their face when you see them rocking that grey uniform with the smug faces, like they've been through it all. But really, they're just desk jockeys, upstart just desk jockeys.
And Mayday brought that up in this episode, where he's like, "How many missions have you been through?" And old mate's like, "Well, he couldn't even answer. He didn't want to answer."
I mean, when it comes to experience, about the only person you couldn't really chastise is probably Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, for sure. Nobody would. I think you have to again mention the animation in the show. It is fucking sensational.
Yeah, it's bang on. They're doing such a great job.
It just looks like everything's hand painted. Even when it's like close up on Crosshair's face at the end of the episode, it's just like you can see the brush strokes. Like, it's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
Mount Tantus looks fucking cool. Like, all the environments just look, and landscapes, man, they're like fucking, what the fuck?
The animation's almost like a living artwork. It's not just an animation, it's like a living artwork.
It is.
Yeah.
It's so good. So,
I mean, even some of these pictures, even some of these stills of Crosshair huddling up with Mayday, even Mount Tantus, some of these things you could actually hang on your wall.
Oh, I would too. Man, I would. Yeah, absolutely agree. It's so good. All right, so hopefully this episode being so good is a sign that the Bad Batch's second season is going to finish much stronger than it started. Because I've said a couple of times, a couple of these episodes, they've sort of lost me. I'm like, oh, I've got to watch Bad Batch again.
I find the Bad Batch is going to have some sort of reason to head back to Mount Tantus, and I reckon they're going to work out the crosshairs there.
Well, obviously they're going to... They'll probably... This is what's going to happen. All right, here's what's going to happen, right? Ready? They will task Crosshair with kidnapping Omega. And he's still got some sort of... He doesn't have full loyalty, but he's got some sort of loyalty. And he'll have something to do with kidnapping her. And maybe they'll trick us, right? And he goes back to the Bad Batch saying, I've had enough. I'm done. And then he also is like, oh, well, I'm going to take the girl. And then he takes the girl, takes it back to the Empire. But then he's like, has another turn. You know, he sees what they're going to do to her, maybe. And then he turns again. And then he rescues Omega.
What about you add Sid in there? What if what you're saying is true? Or what if they've also approached Sid as well, put the hard thing on her?
Yes.
Crosshair, basically, you know, it's like the Snape killing Dumbledore thing instead of, you know, Malfoy. It's that Crosshair doesn't follow through yet at the time, and then Sid comes out of nowhere and just betrays the Bad Batch.
So, that's another very good idea. So, and also it could be like they put out somehow they know what she looks like, and they put out a bounty or a wanted poster, and Sid's like, ooh, I could make some money here. And then she could betray them again ultimately there.
It'd have to be like a ridiculous sum of money.
I don't think it matters to Sid. I think if she can make a buck, she will, you know?
Yeah, true.
Especially for basic plot.
Or maybe throw in a couple of thousand credits in there and leave Ord Mantell alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the Empire's going to do. The Empire's going to throw their pocket change at him and just be like, slap bloody Ord Mantell with Imperial logo.
All right, well, I think that's all we've got to say on these. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm looking forward to what happens next. Before you do it, I'm going to say it. How many buckets?
Ooh, how many buckets? All right, so...
The first episode. What was it? First episode 11?
Metamorphosis.
Metamorphosis.
All right, I'm going to give that one... I'll go 7.5.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good score.
Get my echo bucket, chop it in half. We're good.
Ooh.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
I agree. It's a 7.5. It's not perfect, but it's still...
It's getting there. It's got the right feels to it. They just needed to be... I think they were trying to lead the Bad Batch in the right direction.
Yeah.
But we got kind of no... Not real much, too much plot out of it, I guess.
For me, it's the whole swing of the pendulum where it's like really basic kiddie episode... Oh, really deep clone trooper moral episode.
Hot and cold.
But okay, so episode 12, The Outpost.
The Outpost, you know better. What? I'm going to give that a 9.
I was thinking 9. I was thinking 9.
Yeah, solid 9, man. For me, it was it's very much of the soldier, you know, that loyal soldier who's still struggling to hold on to why he's reason to fight for what he thinks is the greater good. And then still seeing basically what's become of every other clone. It's basically the Empire is forcing the clones to live like homeless men, you know, fight like homeless men more or less. And I think, and it's just cool to see this massive character development from Crosshair who's come so far. He's a great character. We love Crosshair. Even though he's not part of the boys anymore, he's a great character. So with all that, said, you know, it's very, very still like Vietnam War-esque, you know, the fellas coming back from deep mission, getting bunged up, and, you know, they only just make their way back, very platoon-like.
Absolutely.
So for all those reasons, the animation, of course, the music, definitely the music.
We didn't talk about the music. I think it's Kevin Kleiner.
Yep.
The music and the tone that he gives this series, and he's done a lot of Star Wars animation. It is brilliant.
Yes.
I think he's putting in... He is the unsung hero. He is putting in some serious work into the feel of the series. Especially, I think it was the beginning of this episode in Outpost, and it's just like... When they're... Yeah, it's like they're looking down on the planet where they're at and all the buildings and stuff, and like the music there was just so perfect.
But yeah, for all that, definite 9 out of 10 for me.
Beautiful. Well, this has been... I Hate Small Talk, doing the Bad Batch talk. I've been Brenton. You can find me on Instagram, Sovereign41. And you are William.
I am William.
You can find him on Instagram at Echo Bischoff and on TikTok at Echo Bischoff, where he does TikTok things.
Yep, come watch me do silly dances and stuff, like everyone else on TikTok. Yeah. No, I'm just joking.
Thank you very much for listening. I've really enjoyed doing these two episodes, should I say.
Yep.
It's been a good one. We will be back next time for the next two episodes. So in 2 weeks, we'll get together again.
Yes, 2 weeks in time.
And then after that, it'll be another 2 weeks, and we'll do the final two episodes.
Yes.
At this stage, we've got no plans to do any sort of Mandalorian talk.
No.
We've
been asked to, but maybe, I don't know.
We might do not as big as our Andor chat. That's a
three
thing.
Hours,
but
holy damn.
It was awesome. You haven't listened to the Andor one. It's pretty, pretty good.
What do you reckon about doing like a live watch for the last two episodes and then kind of...
Yeah, we could do that. Are we going to do it blind?
Why not?
All right.
I reckon there'd be something pretty cool.
We'll have to come down on Wednesday or do something like that.
Yeah, I'm cool.
And then we can watch it and record as we're watching it.
Yes, I reckon we need to do that shit.
Okay. All right. And we can just react as it's playing out.
Yes.
All right, let's do that.
I'll make sure I wear some tight underpants. I'm not getting too hard.
Okay. We'll do a special presentation where we record live of Bad Batch.
Yes.
Season finale.
That's just something nice and fun for you guys. Yeah. And us too, of course.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully. All right. Thank you once again.
Thank you once again, everybody. If you want to leave any comments to us or get back to us, what you want to hear more of, hear less of, even what's your favorite thing about our podcast, Feel free to. We love input, and we love to hear what you guys would like to say.
Or don't. Just listen.
Just listen. Either way, I'm just sitting here chatting with one of my best mates, you know, enjoying Star Wars. So it's been fun.
Beautiful.
But besides all that, famous last words. May the Force be with you.
Always.
Always.